You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Cook it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel on your community radio station 3CR. And we look at films and the people who make them in the Australian context. And today I had the good fortune to be able to catch up with the filmmaker Lynette Woolworth, that's how you say it, Lynette Woolworth, who has just made a film called Edge of Life, and it's going to be in theatres tonight. In fact, it starts its season tonight. The details about the actual screenings and where you can hear it and see it are at the end of my conversation with Lynette, but let's get on with the meat and potatoes of the program Edge of Life with Lynette Woolworth.
Thank you very much for talking to me today about Edge of Life. I actually were aware of your work from ADIC exposure a couple of years ago when you were doing some pretty amazing stuff with Amazonian Indian people, which is an extension of this film, isn't it? So do you want to give my listeners a little bit of understanding of that pretty fantastic work you were doing then?
That was a virtual reality documentary that we filmed in the Brazilian Amazon at the home of the Yawanawa people, who also appear in Edge of Life. And that story was about the first woman shaman. So the first woman who was allowed to basically undergo the training to become a shaman, and the way her initiation into that field then changed all the leadership structures of the Yawanawa people.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing, because this Edge of Life actually is an exploration of how to die, but with a collaboration of cultures, the Brazilian, Amazonian Indians, of a particular people, Mayan tradition, shaman tradition, coming to the fore with an experiment in Melbourne. They did a trial for palliative care using psychedelics. So, yeah. And then, of course, they realised it was much bigger bag of tricks than they'd ever actually realised. So do you want to tell people a little bit about how you became, as a filmmaker, connected to this project?
Sure. So I read about the trial at St. Vincent's, Melbourne, that doctors Mark Ross and Justin Dwyer were holding for 35 patients who'd been given a terminal diagnosis for all sorts of illnesses. And this was some years ago now, so that they were going to give those patients an experience of a psilocybin to see if it could assist with anxiety at end of life. So all of the people who were involved in that trial knew that they were dying and were, you would say, experiencing a lot of, a huge amount of anxiety at the thought of their approaching death. And so the trial was really to see, could this very old medicine, which we know has been used traditionally by other cultures, could this old medicine being brought into a Western medical system help with, you know, the anxiety that many people feel, the fear that many people feel as they approach the end of life? The trial, of course, these things are done in a highly restricted way. So, of course, only those patients could receive the psilocybin. And I think that that's one of the things that Justin and Mark discover then when they travel all of the way to the Brazilian Amazon and experience the use of a sort of similar medicine, a psychedelic, in a cultural context, is the use of that medicine as part of a community. And the so and I have thought about it a lot since, like the challenge of someone who's having an entirely transcendent mystical experience. It doesn't fit with the banal everyday that shifts completely their understanding.
You're right. It doesn't fit. And in fact, this film is an extremely interesting analysis of not just death and dying and approaches to it, but also about the cultural differences between what is called condor and eagle conceptualizations of life. The people who understand nature and live within it, and people who have decided. In fact, I started to think about why is it that man has to, man in inverted commas, has to consider himself to be God. That is a major divorcing of oneself from the natural environment, which is an exploration in this film, in fact.
I think you're right. There's these deeper threads running underneath it that we didn't necessarily go looking for. But of course, if you start to look at what are the ramifications of living in a death-denying culture, and let's say largely a Western culture is a death-denying culture, it leads to a whole series of decisions, right? Including which some of the beautiful people in our film talk about. Like, if you think of yourself as never dying, if you can go through decades of your life not turning towards the idea that this is a part of living is dying, then you accumulate far more than you may need. You maybe use up many resources instead of thinking of the ones coming after you. There's like a whole series of flow-on reverberations that come from these different worldviews that you're talking about here, which is one which embraces the understanding of our mortality as part of the experience of living, and the other that does not want to look at it and is doing everything possible to turn away from the fact that death is on the horizon.
I mean, I know that it doesn't include giving birth. I mean, I've had a child, and I thought this is such an interesting growing up experience because you can't get out of it. You can't get out of it. It's like with death, you can't get out of it.
And you're right that it points to also a different relationship with the natural world. I mean, I think what you see in this film is the Muka, a Yawanawa person who lives in close connection with a forest, and understanding that death is part of every single thing in that forest. That life and death comes continually. You're living in this cycle. You see it everywhere. You acknowledge it, and you turn towards it, let's say, with more equanimity. And that's one of the things I think. And not just this indigenous worldview around death, but an indigenous worldview around everything being contained in this world we're living in. And there's those deeper reflections, I think, emerge in this film.
I do too. One of the things that I found really fascinating was the way the shaman came to the tree and held onto the tree, because I lived into the bush for about 8 years, and when I came back to the city, I had this overpowering experience of feeling like all the trees were calling out to me, like as in, like they were screaming, like they were stuck in this urban environment. They weren't just decorative elements, they were actually alive beings. So I found that really fascinating about the way he approached things. But this film isn't just, I mean, it's not just about being mystical. And I want people to realize this film is actually an incredible tool and an eye-opening experience in an intellectual way. And because what you do is you follow two people who come from the medical and scientific specific experience. And they're highly trained people. They've been working in these areas for 20 to 15 years. And one of the things I found so fantastic was what Dr. Justin says. He was really, really sort of understanding it all. And he talks about it being intellectually scandalous. And the term is so fantastic.
He's a brilliant man with a brilliant mind, and what an extraordinary person to be able to film and to follow as he has these very different cultural experiences for himself, which he struggles to put into words. And in a way, he's then representing us. You know, he's saying, I don't have the language for this. And that he found it intellectually scandalous that the shaman had a capacity to somehow move in and out of these states of the body, let's say, or into other kind of perceptions of reality that Justin found himself also experiencing. And I think what I love about it is this is not a New Age film, as you're pointing out. This is a film which has a lot of extremely sophisticated people looking at these different understandings of what end of life might be, and as a consequence, what consciousness might be, which is a part of, let's say, contemporary science, and certainly where quantum physics is leading us anyway. And so it was the privilege, really, to be able to follow he and Marg as they took themselves into these zones that were not familiar or comfortable for them.
No, that wasn't comfortable. But it was really interesting too, wasn't it? Because as a filmmaker, you've done a couple of things. You didn't just follow them, their journey. You actually followed the incredible gift of two people who were dying, and the film is actually dedicated to Flavia and Ross in generosity. That was what you called it, isn't it? Because it was a great gift for them to actually, they were two participants in the experiment, and you were able, and they courageously allowed you to be part of that experience. It's quite extraordinary, really.
It's really, and it is an emotional thing. It's an emotional thing as a filmmaker to be filming people who, with Flavia, we expected we'd have more time. We had a very short time with Roz. I mean, both of them, and you cannot underestimate what it means. I cannot underestimate what it means that someone who's very conscious of the short amount of time they likely have left decides to say, come on this journey with me, and I will allow this camera here and here and in all of these moments. Because what Roz was doing, I think, was really, it was a decision to want her cancer experience, her experience on the trial, her experience with the psilocybin, with the therapies, with all of it, she wanted to offer it as something that would be of assistance to others. And you cannot, I can just never be grateful enough for her generosity in wanting to do that with her limited time. But she was like such a fearless warrior, Roz. And you see that, I think, when she meets Mukka. I think what you see is that there's a recognition, right, between those two. There's something he sees in her, her strength, like her phenomenal strength, and the way she turned towards her approaching death, and she leant into it. And the evidence of the kind of healthiness of that, you can see it now in the children she's left behind, these young adults she's left behind who she brought with her on this forward-looking journey, who were able to now then navigate their grief in, I would say, a very different way to what a lot of people are left with. My hope is that people see this film and understand that grief doesn't have to be an open wound. You know, you could be left with your memories, not with a wound that never heals. It's about us learning to navigate it differently. And that's what Roz shows.
Dr. Marg actually points out something in particular, because of course these are two different people who are experiencing this journey. One of the things that she contributed was this business about language of the spiritual. She was saying we don't have this language of the spiritual. And then it went on to further interrogate the deeply inadequate world of rational thought. As someone I recently spoke to about rational thought, because she's an incredibly intellectual type of person, she said, failure of rational thought is that it doesn't actually take all the information in, that it's actually refusing the experience of emotion and feeling, and therefore it's an inadequate system, or rather it's not doing rationality very well. And this is something that came out in this film, because now they want laws and arrangements that like recognize that psychedelics can be helpful in this area, but it actually is not really understanding the entire cosmology of the methodology that is quite clearly being put forward by the community experience of the shamans.
I think you're right, and Marg does talk about this a lot. I think she says something like, you know, the transcendent cannot be squeezed into this container, into this narrow container, and they do struggle with it, both Justin and Marg, and try and work out, so how do we talk about what our patients are experiencing when we are discouraged from using this kind of language ourselves? I think about it more as materialism, like that. Western culture has a materialist worldview. If you cannot touch it or show it, then it's, or quantify it, then it's not valued. And so therefore all of these other experiences of consciousness, let's say, cannot be held in that container. I think that that's what these two doctors wrestle with. Okay, what do we do with this then, and how do we help our patients navigate it if we don't have the language to talk about it? And a lot of their exploration, you see Justin asking, Mukka, how do you talk with people as they approach death? How do you do it? The same with the Mayan shamans, the same questions. You know, we saw you navigating this with Flavia. How are you doing it? It's like, this is my words, not their words. I would say there's a void in our culture, and it's precisely in this area. It's like there's a bubble around it. We're not meant to look at it. And not just that, we are discouraged from talking about it.
The Enlightenment was a great boon. Very important, very historically important intellectual pursuit. But of course, it then meant politically and historically a purging of the previous cosmologies, which means that you are removing all the knowledge of thousands of years. I mean, it's being an extremist, effectively.
Yes, and you can see in this film, there's a couple of examples that I've really, you know, clung to in the edit, you know, because what I'm wanting to show is there is something missing, this idea that something's been missing, which is what you're pointing to. So we've grasped onto this thing and we've denied all these other things to the side, some of which is mental loss culturally, which leaves us with people dying, being afraid, facing a void with no kind of cultural container, as Marg would say, to hold them. You know, in the film you see Chris Kerr, beautiful Dr. Chris Kerr, who runs the Buffalo Hospice, who's done years of research into the dreams people have as they're approaching death. And his research says very consistently that people have often a dream, or they might more likely call it an apparition of someone they've loved who's already died, appearing to them. Now, he's written about this, he's published about it, he's spoken about it. When Justin goes and asks the same question of Mukka in the Amazon, you know, what should people expect as they're dying? He says exactly the same thing. They should expect to see that their loved ones, who they have loved and lost, appearing to them. Now, I love those kind of moments in this film.
Oh, yeah. The thing where the nurse says to the high-powered doctor, no, we're not going to do that. He's dying. And he says, how do you know? His deceased mother came to speak to him. Like, they already know this. All the people who take care of these people already know this.
They know it. Yes. And so, and do you know what? I have in my own family history, and you may in yours, and many of us do, these anecdotal stories. This happened to my great grandmother. It was very well known. She, on her deathbed, surrounded by her daughters, said, "Oh, he was her husband. She spoke to him." But why that is not then held culturally as an understanding of what end of life may bring is goes to the point you're talking about, because you can't quantify it and you can't prove it. And because we've gone down this particular road, we've lost some things that could be hugely helpful to us.
You go to a variety of people who have been studying this. You went to Dr. Chris, but you also went to,
Bill Richard.
who's an important voice in this particular discussion, isn't he?
Yeah. He's an important voice because he's an elder in this field. He had his first psilocybin experience in a trial condition in Germany in the 1960s. So in that those very early kind of first Western explorations into what might these medicines help us understand about ourselves. So he's known it for a long time. And he says, you don't have to take psychedelics to access these states. You can experience them. Some women will experience them in childbirth, he says. You might experience them through meditation. But these medicines are a reliable key for accessing this state of transcendence, which is part of human existence. Now, I love having his words of wisdom in there because he's looked at it for so many years and from such a long, like a long view. And he's experienced psilocybin, he's given psilocybin to so many different people, including to a group of various leaders of different religions. So he's trying to, I would say, point to the possibility that these are tools that could be beneficial for us if we can bring them into our culture and use them in order to access these states of awareness that are beyond the physical. And I'm just immensely grateful to anyone who's seriously looking at how we can help ourselves culturally to deal with this major moment of transition that everyone will face, and that many people are terrified in Western culture of drawing close to.
It's funny because I actually remember saying it to somebody. I was asking somebody about the person who had died, and I said, "Did they have a good death?" And I come from a kind of an Irish Catholic background, which is a little bit has a the tinge of magical thinking about it, and all these things are so terribly important, and always have been important, like nature. It's almost like all your stuff is trying to be removed from your connections, your power, personal power, which is what all this is about, actually, communal and personal power.
I think so. I think for me, the words I use for myself to understand it is what these medicines are offering, or what these forms of experience are offering, what you is a direct experience of the mystical for yourself. You don't need an intermediary. And if you don't need an intermediary, then you can know it for yourself. Roz said something very powerful to me because she was a very Christian woman, as you see
Yeah,
in
that's
the film.
right.
This experience intensifies her belief. It doesn't dilute it. But what she did say to me was that, you as a Christian, you have a faith, and so you believe these things, but the psilocybin allowed her to experience it.
That's an interesting.
Now, isn't it? And so, and so then, quick. I ask myself the kind of the deeper, like threads flowing from this for me are then why has the direct experience of the mystical been so removed from Western culture? Like, to what end? What does that serve?
From a filmmaker's point of view, this is a big journey. And how much of your life have you connected to this film?
Oh, so I mean, we filmed over a year, but the thinking or the planning was years in advance. And you can know Tashka Yawa now has co-written this film with me, so it was many conversations with him, which date back to at least 2020, 2019, when I began talking with him about this different cultural understandings and wondering if there was a way that I could pull those threads together. in some sort of a film. And then I read about Justin and Marg's trial. And I thought this would be a great way to bring these threads back together. And so met with them, talked with them, and then began filming, and filmed over 1 year both Flavia and Roz's journey, and then Justin and Marg's exploration further into the more traditional cultural uses. And then it's months and months of editing, but it's honestly a lifelong passion for me. I do. This is the second feature documentary I've made, and the first one was about a little group south of Sydney who started. Who start through the film, Australia's first not-for-profit funeral company. Again, to try and manage and help how we manage end of life. It's a lifelong passion for me. That people are still dying isolated and scared is something that I feel very moved by, and probably will bring all my skills to bear onward. Not just in this film, but continuing to try and find ways to offer a different perspective and help us navigate a different way.
It's coming out in theatres now, in fact.
Yes, for Melbourne, it's going to be in Village Knox at Wantirna South, Cinema Nova Carlton, Village Southland, Cheltenham, Classic Cinemas Elsternwick, and Cameo Cinemas Belgrave.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for spending some time talking to me about the film.
I've really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for talking with me about it.
And that was my chat with Lynette Walworth about her film Edge of Life. And as she said, as Lynette said, it's in cinemas now. It's really well worth listening to. Coming up next is Published or Not. And we'll go out a little with the same track we came in with, Kutcher Edwards, because it just seems to be perfectly matched to the conversation that we've just had.
I was born by the river in a little tent, just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh yes it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh yes it will. I go to the movies and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a I say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me down, back down on my knees. There's been times when I thought I couldn't last for long. Now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. Produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.